Good morning and welcome to the New Orleans Imperative. This is your host, Renard Sanders, and we're here every Monday morning talking about the unpopular truths in this publicly financed private school district that we have here in New Orleans, post-Katrina. And for those of you all that are listening to us for the first time, we'd like to welcome you. For those of you all who are not, who have been listening to us before, we'd like to welcome you back. And if you're transitioning to a computer, you can listen to us online at www.bok1230am.com. That's wbok1230am.com. Since last legislative session of, the legislative session of 2012, there have been some legal challenges to most of the education legislation that was rammed through the 2012 legislative session. Some of that had to do with, most of that had to do around two bills called Act 1 and Act 2 that included the voucher program, that included teacher tenure laws, and a number of other things. Since then, some of that legislation has been struck down by lower courts and the U.S. Supreme Court. And a lot of that is in litigation, which was questioned before. Here joining us again this morning is Steve Monahan, president of Louisiana Federation of Teachers. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Doc. How are you?
I'm okay. I want to thank you for taking time from your schedule to talk with us. But, you know, this education stuff, it just, I mean, every day it's just more and more and more. Now probably more than ever this year on the legal side. And that's what we're here to talk about this morning. And last week, a week before last, the Fifth Circuit Court struck down, well, dismissed a case, an appeal by the state in regard to Tangipahoa Parish, which had to do with the voucher program. I know that you guys were either indirectly or directly involved with that because you guys have been at the forefront of most of this litigation from the massacre of public education in 2012, so to speak. So could you tell us a little bit about what's going on, where the process is, not only in this particular decision, but also the overall let's say, up-to-date judicial things that are going on with the voucher program?
Well, the voucher program, as you said, we've been involved in this since the very beginning, coming out of the 2012 session. We filed the lawsuits against both Acts 1, the so-called tenure talent portion of the governor's program, and Act 2, which is the voucher program, on June 7th. In the 19th Judicial Court, two separate, very conservative jurists ruled both acts unconstitutional. The governor, using outside counsel, and that's been fairly public also, and the amount of money that's been spent on those cases, appealed to the Supreme Court. On May 8th, Louisiana Supreme Court affirmed the district court's judgment that the voucher program, as funded using the minimum foundation funds, was indeed unconstitutional. The use of those funds from the minimum foundation program, that was the key part of the complaint, the violation of the Louisiana Constitution, as well as the key part of the Supreme Court's ruling in support of the lower court. Now, what our legislature did, and just keeping it on the vouchers for a moment, our legislature, in its infinite wisdom, it did the right thing on one part, where it refused to affirm the Department of Education's funding plan for 2013. It shot that down. Senate Education Committee unanimously killed it, meaning they struck down the Department of Ed's interest in plan to use the funds the same way again, leaving us with really no minimum foundation program presented through the mechanism that it's supposed to be used, which is through the BSEE, voted of our BSEE members, and then forward to our schools. Leaving us in a place where the legislature funded public education using the last constitutional formula, which was the 2011 formula. Now, what they also, when I say infinite wisdom, because the governor persisted on the voucher side, funded outside of the minimum foundation program. He funded the vouchers, continued to fund, dedicating some $40+ million, but also expanded the program. Now, what made that particularly injurious to everyone who thinks and weighs into public policy debates is that that was done. The expansion was done just as the expansion was the original bill in 2012 to make this a statewide program, based upon no research indicating that there was any real public good being done, either for communities or for children that were using the vouchers. It was a massive PR campaign. It was the first pep rally the governor had participated on the steps of the Capitol in years. Now, so we now have in place a voucher program still persisted on in our communities, siphoning away limited dollars without any evidence of improving student performance or helping the majority of our students. While we, at the same time, the governor vetoed, if you might remember Dr. Sanders, big controversial issue of vetoing just a measly $4 million to help disabled children and families. So there was, again, a choice made, a persistence of purpose as far as in the decimation of public education as we know it, was continued even though the will of the people. And I'm saying to listeners on your show, and if I were on a different radio show with a different audience, I would be just as assured that the voucher program, as it was implemented in the state of Louisiana, is just as unpopular across the demographics of our state. But yet, because of a ideologically driven administration, we are going to persist in funding those kinds of programs, despite whether the public wants them or not. And that's where we stand now. The voucher program continues. The court ruling stands that they cannot use the minimum foundation funds, but they're continuing to defy the will, what I see as not only judicial will, but the express will of the electorate by continuing that program. Now, I think where the piper will be paid in the next election cycle. Yeah, I think that is going to be a major issue in the state of Louisiana.
Well, you know, I think the issue once again with this governor is a national agenda, you know. And it appears that the destruction of public education has become a national agenda for many people, and it's across party lines. So there is a rebellion going on nationally in regards to charters, in this case vouchers in other parts of the country too, siphoning of funds, attacking teachers. Once again, we have a governor and a state superintendent who's filing, in regards to this voucher issue, a national agenda rather than what the public wants and those kinds of things, you know. For instance, you know, in many surveys and here in New Orleans, as you well know, people want neighborhood schools. Mm-hmm. But that's not their agenda. So they have given each one of the Recovery School District, which controls most of the schools in New Orleans, has given each one of these schools an attendance zone the size of the city. So, you know, they're adamant about not allowing me or you to send our child around the corner to a neighborhood school. Mm-hmm. They're despite what we want to do.
I will tell you some good news, because I think that's what we have to look mm-hmm. for the light at the end of that
please do.
And it's not a train, I hope, uh-huh. that we see coming our way. Just recently, in fact, in this month, the AFT, American Federation of Teachers, commissioned a scientific survey. Now, you mentioned surveys, and it was the HART research group that did the survey. I'm making a point of speaking slowly here and making sure that everyone understands this isn't a popularity kind of survey.
Yeah, yeah.
It had a margin of error of 3.1%. So it's a pretty reliable piece of work.
Yeah.
And here's what I think is going to play in exactly what you and I talk about so often.
Mm-hmm.
Folks are seeing what's happening. And here's what the survey found. 77% of the parents, it was a survey of parents, had to have kids that were in public schools. 77% of the parents wanted to support traditional public education, wanted a neighborhood school. They saw their public school as a foundation for their community. They didn't support the budget cuts, the increased testing, the school closures, the narrowing of curriculum, the excessive testing. They were unequivocal about this. It was a little bit shocking for someone who sees hope out there. For me, in fact, they felt that the schools were so much more so the most important institutions in communities that they ranked them at the top, even over the religious centers of the communities, the religious institutions themselves, by a plurality of 51% to 14% for saying that the church was the center. And that's not to disrespect the church. It's simply folks understand, I think the survey reveals something really simple.
Yeah.
Your community is built around a school. That pride that comes out of a school that's at the center of a community, and if we were wise and going in the right direction, that community, that school could be the hub of where parents train and learn, where we have a library that goes beyond the school day. I've been in states, and I'm sure you have too, where in the evening the school, the recreational facilities of that school, some of them have pools where the community swims.
That's what schools
here.
Yeah, schools are an important part of functional communities, and they provide hope, they provide help, they provide assistance for that community, regardless, and that is not necessarily just for school age kids. But the school is very, very, it's a sense of pride for that community, you know. You worked in New Orleans, and I worked in New Orleans, and you worked at Carver. I've worked at several schools. I was a principal at John McDonough. But those schools were pride for that community, regardless how tough, and those were, you know, we worked with populations, as you well know, that were really struggling financially and going through all of the ills of an urban society suffering, you know. But for their school, when they talk about their school, their neighborhood school, Carver and John McDonough and Clark and Coyne, that evokes a sense of pride even till today. And I think you can attest to that, you know. Now get into this recent decision. Are you guys involved with this court case that went through the Fifth Circuit regarding Tangible Hope Parish, or do you know much about it?
Well, that was the Tangible Hope School Board that filed that.
Uh-huh.
Because, of course, as you well know, DSEG cases are unique in the sense in the sense that they're all about the same subject, but they're unique in what the judge's rulings in particular are. And in the case of that district, now we're involved in the sense that we are watching it closely in regard to how it affects cases under Act 1. But it was the school board that made it very, very clear in federal court that it made the Acts 1 and 2 made it impossible for the court for the board to actually implement the judgment under that DSEG order. Now, what my reading, and we have our attorneys looking at it right now in regard mm-hmm. what it means in regard to Act 1, we have to be real clear, it only deals with right now that particular school district. It would be for other districts to file their own lawsuits that are involved in DSEG cases. But basically what I get out of that, Dr. Sanders, is that the court essentially saying is that yes, we dismissed the lawsuit, the appeal that the Department of Education filed over Judge Lamel's ruling that Tangi didn't have to abide by the Act 1 and 2. It was clearly saying that you don't, you're right, you know, we dismissed that lawsuit on Act 2 because the Supreme Court in Louisiana has already pretty much made that moot. Act 2 is unconstitutional as the funding of the vouchers through the Minimum Foundation Program. But it didn't speak at all to Act 1. The Fifth Circuit didn't, from the reading of it, did not speak to Act 1. So right now, we don't know what that means in PNG in regard to the evaluations as they're rolling out in districts and how districts will be forced to act on these things. So
yeah, it did,
a little
it,
bit up in the air.
Yeah, it did mention that Lamell's also block implementation intangible whole of the teacher tenure law that was passed in 2012 along with the voucher program.
Yeah, well, he did. Lamell did, but
the Fifth Circuit didn't rule on that per se. Gotcha. Right. Gotcha. Let's do a little housekeeping right quick, Steve. You're listening to the New Orleans Imperative, and we're listening to Steve Monahan, the president of Louisiana Federation of Teachers, and we're talking about the legal challenges to the unconstitutional voucher program that was passed in the Louisiana legislature in 2012. And specifically, we're talking about the tangible hold decision by the Fifth Circuit Court, which recently came down, I think, a week and a half ago. But we're talking about the voucher program in general. If you wish to call in, you can call in at 260-9265. That's 504-260-9265. If you're transitioning to a computer, you can listen to us online at www.wbok1230am.com. That's wbok1230am.com. Now, Steve, I want to pose a question to you that one of my friends posed to me. This is around the voucher issue. It's not around this specific legal case, okay? And my friend said, what is wrong if I want to send my child to a good school? And what's wrong with the voucher program if I don't want my child to go to a public school? And for people that are, you know, not in the weeds on this subject and those kinds of things, what is wrong with the voucher program in your opinion? And let's not talk about the funding and those kinds of things, but how does that hurt or how does that help?
Well, I think it all begins on a real very, very simple premise that the individual, your friend, my friend, because I've heard those same, we must have the same friend.
Yeah, we do.
They feel like, you know, I'm able to take care of my own, so I should be able to send my child wherever I choose to send.
Yeah,
that's
a
simple argument.
Yeah.
But where it really breaks down in the real world is it is the business that makes that choice. You may choose to send your child wherever, but it doesn't mean that school has to accept your child. Now, so in order to provide your child, my child, everyone's child, with an equal opportunity for a quality education, then wherever I am allowed to send my child has to be a quality school. Now, if school A won't accept my child because maybe I have my money's green, and I've known very wealthy people that have been refused entree to certain schools because, and I could tell those, but I feel like I get too close to the fire with the individuals, because they weren't necessarily in that country club, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Their money was green, but it wasn't quite green enough to get their child in that school. Now, if we all agree that there are a limited number of seats in the school, the so-called great school, then your friend, my friend, has to then look at another school because that child's not going to be, you know, it may not be admitted. I saw that play out in New Orleans after the Katrina. We can spend a lot of time talking about what happened in Algiers, right?
Oh, yeah.
But just to go just to the mythical here. So that means, as we go down with this domino effect of available seats, where we all ought to be able to center is that every school that is open to help a child learn, to offer that access to quality education, should be doing that. Now, here's where we get into the weeds of where the voucher system fails. One on the choice, and it's real simple, the choice is not the parents, the choice is the owner of the business. Now it becomes my money, your money, that is voucherizing attendance at one of those buildings. So you can't attend there, Dr. Sanders, but Monahan's kid can, but you can go to another one with that voucher. Now it becomes quality assurance. If the state is saying, or any state or government says, that we're going to fund the product on behalf of the tax, all taxpayers, then the Louisiana model fails the test again, because it does take no responsibility for the quality of education that's coming out of those schools. Allowing the school to say, we're only going to test the children on vouchers. We're not going to hold those children accountable to the same high standards. In other words, pass, fail, and not promotional standards as we do in the public schools. We're creating now a systemic, we're sanctioning a systemic discriminatory practice on the part of the of where government's involved. So all things are not equal, and I think here's what I say to my friends. Look at the list of the schools that are accepting and the number of students accepting for voucher students. And don't ask yourself why certain schools are on the list. I think what's important to ask is why certain schools aren't on the list. And private education has always been that. Private education's been the guarantee of exclusivity for a child. The difference is I pay my money, therefore I can pay for the separation that that money provides. It doesn't mean equal access to every child that's out there. Otherwise, it has no longer has that exclusivity. Mm-hmm. So again, to making it, you know, it's hard not to go to the funding, but because we live in a world that revolves around, if you have money, that certain things, you privileges you have, and if you don't, certain privileges you don't get. It does come to the money, because a limited amount of money available to fund the access to quality education is out there. A limited amount of money. And as we siphon that money away, and we provide vouchers for schools that aren't held accountable for the product, then the friend who sends the child to the school that accepts his or her child has only the hope that that school is providing anything more than a separation from another group of children. And, I mean, that is a long-winded answer, but it's the kind of conversations I had over my glass of Chardonnay with my friends.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the other thing is that people have perceptions about what are good schools and what are not good schools. And, you know, I can safely say, and I think we can all agree, even before we went into this old voucher situation 2 years ago, that many of these private schools did not provide a quality education. And people just assume that you, if you are a private school in Louisiana, or, you know, in particular here in New Orleans, then it's better than a public education. Now, what has come to light here recently, you know, with the, you know, the news about, you know, the New Living Word in Ruston is a classic example of that, you know. So people have these perceptions about what is a good school and what's not a good school, which kind of feeds into this, this frenzy, so to speak. But, you know, I get a little deeper in the weeds with my friends when we talk about this. I say, well, let's take, for instance, is it right for you to state all of a sudden that you don't like the garbage service that's being picked up at your house, and that you want to take the money that you're paying for garbage service and you want to give it to some guy who doesn't have a license, we don't know anything about, and you want that money to go over there to him? You know, I think public education is a greater public service than picking up garbage, and it should be handled with the utmost care and respect, given the fact it's our greatest resource, you know. But this perception, and what is a good school and what is not a good school? I mean, these guys in Baton Rouge, particularly this, you know, Department of Education and the Whites and the Pastoracks and them, on a Monday morning you could be a good school, and on Monday at midday you could be a terrible school. They could just change the ratings on you.
Well, because they begin the conversation, and that's what makes really honest brokers who don't want to start a position of a prejudice have a real problem dialoguing with it, because they begin from a position that anything that is private is superior to anything that belongs to the public as a whole. And so the language then becomes skewed from the position of, we know that public education, though I'm using the rhetoric that I've heard, is a failed experiment. So that's where their conversation will begin.
Yeah.
Public education. Now, how have we arrived at this understanding? We have, because they have captured the public square, and they have produced a method, their method, of weighing the value of that school, of a school. They assigned a letter grade to it. But I think you have to accentuate for all of our friends the hypocrisy that's involved in this the mental gymnastics here. And I think that's what the Jindal plan has illustrated.
Yeah,
if that is true, you've got your grading system and you've said these schools are Fs. That means you drag down the value of that entire community, by the way. Your house is worth less than an F school district, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. Everything falls around that. But I am not going to, as the governor of the state, as John White, I'm not going to assign any grade to the schools that we're holding out as being the schools that are of choice. No grade there. They're good. 95% of everybody loves them. They're good. But we're going to assign a letter grade to the schools that are being labeled. And I think, you know, here's where the folly even becomes even more frivolous, where studies mean nothing, or when the government speaks so convolutedly that it has no value. We're going to sweep into their schools that are Cs. C schools also can be left for these schools without grades. Now, to me, that's quintessential hypocrisy. They would have been better off if they would have said, guess what, we're going to have a voucher system here, and we're going to grade these schools, and all of them are going to be graded and labeled. And I know we're running out of time, but, Doc, you know what outrages me? In every one of those buildings where children attend school, there are kids that are studying really hard, and they're bringing those report cards home with A's on them. But they've been redlined. That's what my friend used to tell me from another generation, right?
Yeah,
they come from the F school.
Yeah, and they're terrible. Now, you know, and that's not to say that the schools that have been at high schools here particularly, and I could use them as an example, that have been taken over, even though in an F school, we might have a kid in there made a 27, 28 on ACT.
Right.
You know, but does that disparage him? But look, we have a caller we need to take, Miss Naomi, right quick, okay?
Okay.
All right. Good morning, Naomi.
Yes,
Ms. Naomi.
Good morning to the both of you, and we certainly appreciate your having this topic of discussion for this morning. But I just wanted to ask your guest if he knows of any lawyer or lawyers, either locally, statewide, or nationally, who would file legal actions on behalf of the children and students regarding the voucher program. When the lawsuits were filed, they were filed on behalf of school boards and on behalf of teacher associations. There were several of us who tried our best to get either a lawyer or lawyers to file on behalf of the children, and despite our best efforts through calls and meetings, no one came forward. And the reason why that we are looking for an answer to this question is because the students are suffering a denial of equal protection with respect to these programs. They are also suffering from a continuing pattern and practice of denial and discrimination in these programs, including the tests, TOPS, and so many others. And the last point that I'll make is, so many of the problems now that teachers and school boards are experiencing are and have a foundation of the basic discrimination and denial with respect to our students. Our students' problems underlie the problems that the school boards and the teachers are experiencing now. So do you have any ideas or suggestions for us so that we can get someone to help file legal actions on behalf of the children? Hello?
Steve?
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me, Steve?
Oh, I was waiting for Dr.
No. I think she was asking you, per se. You want to respond to it?
Yeah, first off, I'd like to say we took our lawsuit when we took the lawsuits forward on June 7th. We did not see them on behalf of the teachers, there's a thing in standing, as we all know, in court, and how you have standing and when you don't have standing. We felt that we were filing lawsuits that were specifically aimed at winning, in the sense that they were clear violations we saw to the Louisiana Constitution. And we did feel very strongly that we were filing them on behalf of children. I mean, I know the way the media tells the story and the way that it becomes the Louisiana Federation of Teachers or Louisiana School Boards or whatever. But I can assure you, as president of LFT, when we contemplated the lawsuits, we weren't contemplating lawsuits as the idea of a protectorate for the employees of the school boards. It was truly in the interest of what we felt was in the best interest of children, and as a parent, that's where I came. I will say, though, that I do understand on another level what I think I'm being asked, the equal protection issues. I know there are national lawyers, there are people in national groups right now looking at possible federal actions in some of those areas, and I know there are looking at those that have been discussing the possibility of legal action dealing with separation of church and state issues, both federal concerns. Do I know any particular lawyers per se? I mean, to be a direct answer, no. I know that the litigants that we were dealing with, and I have utmost respect for the lawyers that were involved in these cases, they did a great job of arguing what we believe were the winnable points, and they perceived they were the winnable points of the case. I don't have any conversations or remember conversations with individuals, and I know we haven't gotten into particulars of such a lawsuit, that brought up a germane cause of action in regard to Louisiana Constitution.
Well, I thank you for those comments, and I certainly want to applaud all that the teachers of LFT have done over the years and for your leadership at present. And the only thought and issue that we were raising by this question has to do with the fact that all along our school history, there have been tests that have been adversely impacting a certain population of our constituencies.
I agree with that.
That was the basic kind of thing that we were directing our efforts towards when we were trying to get lawyers on behalf of the children. We certainly are grateful for what you all did with those winnable issues that we were able to more or less sort of get taken care of. But it's those really tough issues that now are the issues that I think we need to address more so than before, because if we don't address them, the educational holocaust that's being perpetrated on our children at this point is just unconscionable. And so if you at a later time, or if anybody in the audience knows of lawyers that would come forward.
Well, Ms. Naomi, I don't mean to cut you off, but we got to go. But I want to take this conversation up with a private conversation, because there is some activity that has been thinking right along the same lines
you're thinking of.
Thank you so much. You would just hold on. Lee is going to get your number again, and I'm going to call you, and we're going to talk today, because we're working on something
to have that conversation.
And to broaden that conversation, I think we need your input. So just hold on one second.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling, Naomi. Steve, we're a little over time, but, you know, as usual, it's great, and we want to get you back on the air soon, because I want to get into it. I'm going to have a show on this Common Core madness, and I got to get your feel on that. So hopefully we'll get you back on the show before September if your schedule fits for us to talk
about
it.
I'd love to do it. We're still actually waiting to go back to court on Act 1, you know. We didn't touch that one either.
But
I always look forward to these conversations. I really do I want Naomi to know that I really do know what she's talking about.
I understand the frustration, and count me in
on any conversations as you move forward in that area.
Sure, well, I'll be calling you later this week, and we'll have that off air. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks again, Steve.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, all right. Also this morning, and we'd like to thank Steve again for calling in, and a very interesting question from Naomi, who always calls in with some interesting questions. We'd like to welcome into our studio for the first time Ms. Anitra Brown, a managing editor of the New Orleans Tribune. Good morning, Anitra.
Good morning, Dr. Sanders. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming in. You know, we always see your stuff in print, but, you know, I think that, you know, it's good for you guys to come on the air and just talk every now and then about the great work that you guys are doing by the New Orleans, at the New Orleans Agenda. What I want you to talk about is the recent commentary in the article that you guys did as it relates to the controversy around a Mr. Scott Snyder, who was the vice president of the State Board of Ethics, and Kyra Orange Jones on the Bessie board, and you guys did an article. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what has resulted as a result of you guys' due diligence on this most important topic?
Sure. Well, we'll go a little bit further back than that article to Kyra Orange Jones, the ethical questions surrounding her election to the Bessie board. Couple that with her role as the head of the state. The state's Teach for America office. And so as you know, and I'm assuming many of your listeners know, there were some ethical questions that were raised regarding that. As the head of the TFA office, should she be allowed to maintain that seat, given that the state of Louisiana has lucrative contracts with TFA that puts their recruits in classrooms across.
And those questions were raised prior to the election.
They were prior to the election and certainly after the election. And I think that the result that many people, you know, the least people were hoping for was that she would relinquish her role at TFA. At any rate, the ethical question was raised, brought before the State Ethics Board, and we also know the outcome of that. The Ethics Board went against its own staff's recommendation that there is an ethical problem here, and decided that there wasn't. A member of that board at the time was a gentleman by the name of Scott Snyder, appointed to Bessie. I can't think of the very first time he was appointed, but reappointed in 2011 by Governor Jindal after lobbying to be reappointed. He wanted to be reappointed. He was... And I was not at that meeting, but I've spoken to people who were. And so the reports I've gotten is that he was an outspoken member of the board during that ethical hearing on behalf of Kyra Orange Jones's case. And the question that we raised a couple of weeks ago, maybe it's been about a month and a half or so now, as it relates to that is, given his role, again, another ethical question, his role as a assistant general counsel at Tulane University, which houses the Cowan Institute, which has its hands in various educational endeavors.
Privatization efforts.
Thank you.
That's a good way to put it.
So, yes. So they are, PC they are, and euphemistic.
They are privatized.
It is a part of this whole effort to privatize, and it's not even an effort anymore. It is what has happened.
Yeah,
to privatize public education in New Orleans. The Cowan Institute has a relationship with TFA. And so here you have a gentleman who probably should have recused himself from even having a vote on that question. But not only did he not recuse himself, he spoke
vigorously
and passionately on behalf of Kyra Orange Jones's point and against. And I think this is the part that just, you know, floors me, against the recommendation of his own staff.
And that decision by the ethics board, as you said, they disagreed with the staff. It violates the state law.
It absolutely violates state law. So we printed that a commentary about 6 weeks ago. It's still on our website. And about what, July, earlier this month, July 3rd, 4th, Mr. Snyder resigned his position.
Rightfully so.
With the State Ethics Board. And we would like to think that perhaps he was prodded, pushed, driven to that by our article, which questioned his role and his decision-making in that whole effort.
Yeah, and just for our listening audience that may not be aware of this whole issue in totality, Kyra Orange Jones, who I think she's been in office now about a year and a half.
About a year and a half,
and she represents on the Bessie Board, which oversees all K-12 education in Louisiana. And as a member of that Bessie Board, she votes and approves contracts and also sets policy. And the Bessie Board has probably now a 7-year contractual relationship with Teach for America, and Kyra R. Jones is the executive director of Teach for America. So there is a state policy that states that it is, you cannot be on a board and vote for a contract that basically for a company that you work for, if you are quote unquote a director, mm-hmm. if you hold some high position, and she is the executive
director of the state Teach for America, New Orleans,
I think, but she is an executive director. So the staff of the Louisiana Board of Ethics made a recommendation to the board that this is illegal. It's very clear violation of state law. She has to either do two things: stop getting paid by Teach for America and stay on the board, or
get off the board. Teach for America.
And you can choose which one you would.
Well, apparently you don't have to choose.
Here we have an individual that argues for that, and you know, it appears as if we, and I want to get your comments on this, Anitra. It appears as if we are at the point in state government where policies don't matter, ethics don't matter anymore. It appears that that's what this administration has driven us to.
It appears that we're at a point in state government, I'm going to speak, particularly to these education issues that you deal with on a regular basis. We're at a point where the policies and the ethics are muddied and don't matter if they do not move forward the clear agenda that's already set. They will find a way to work around it.
You're right. And if they violate the policy, they don't care, And, we have several conflicts of interest around this education thing. And I want to once again thank, you and the Tribune and Beverly McKenna for bringing this topic, this issue to light in the public. But we have a situation where Chaz Roma, mm-hmm. who's on the board, sister is with the
Louisiana Charter
School. Chairman of the Louisiana Charter School Association. And the ethics board, it says that he should not be voting on anything relative to them, but he votes and comments anyway. Mm-hmm. So we have this in public education, because it looks like in public education, maybe because I massage this stuff every day, it's a free fall. It's lawlessness. Mm-hmm. They don't care anything about ethics, laws, or anything like that. But it appears as if we have a lot of conflicts of interest as it relates to issues around, public education here, on the Bessie Board, and also, in many of these grants, and, the Cowan Institute, and, New Schools New Orleans, all of those things.
Yeah, the biggest conflict of interest we have is that, nothing that's being done has evidenced itself as having positive outcomes and results. Unfortunately, that's one.
For the children who are educated in public schools in New Orleans, that's the biggest conflict, all the money that's coming down through these huge grants.
And you still have schools, a vast majority of schools, particularly those that are under RSD control, that are failing. And when you have individuals who will not even abide by their own policies, what do you expect?
It's a state of lawlessness. I call it this whole voucher and charter operation in Louisiana. It's like the Louisiana Gold Rush. It's like free government money. There's just no accountability to it. It's just awful. Let's do a little housekeeping right quick, Anitra. You're listening to Anitra Brown, the managing editor of the New Orleans Tribune, and we're talking about the conflict of interest that appeared on the state ethics board between a gentleman by the name of Scott Snyder and his vigorous campaign to convince the BESI board, the Louisiana Ethics Board, to go ahead and allow Kyra Jones to accept a salary from Teach for America while they have a multi-million-dollar contract with the BESI board, which she votes on. If you wish to call in, you can call in at 504-260-9265 for a comment or question. That's 504-260-9265. If you're transitioning to a computer, you can listen to us online at WBOK1230AM.com. That's WBOK1230AM.com. So, Anitra, getting back to this issue, you know, about ethics and those kinds of things, and I can only wholeheartedly agree with you on the fact that, there is no positive outcomes in here for children, despite all of the millions and even billions of dollars that are being spent. But the other thing that really bothers me, and I know you guys have written a lot about this. You guys did a special edition on public education called Stop the Madness, and that is the disengagement of the public from the process. Mm-hmm. And I just want you to comment on, this undemocratic institution now that we call public education. Mm-hmm. It's insane.
Yeah. Well, and that it's so many different elements that have come into play when you look at the disengagement, because these schools, many of them are charter schools, what I call quasi-private institutions. You have these boards that are appointed and selected, not elected. And so you have individuals who are governing schools, individual schools, or maybe groups of schools if a charter organization has control of several campuses, that are not elected and therefore not accountable to the people of this city, the taxpayers and the children, the taxpayers and the parents of the children who go there. And then a lot of what has happened, unfortunately, and this is my opinion, with the way that things happen here post Katrina, a lot of the changes, many of the changes began before. But a lot of the changes really started to take hold and form themselves after Katrina, when people were scattered all over the place. And then when they did begin to return, you're dealing with so many fundamental issues. How do I get housing or a job and so many of the people of New Orleans, just it was a struggle for them to even understand what was taking place.
And so people became disengaged
because of that. So you have that element at work, and then you have this structure that has been set up that takes the representation out of it. Who do you call when you have a problem?
Those boards, as you say, are appointed and self-appointed, and I think they're not representative. Even the ones that are appointed, they're not representative. Some of them have no parents, no community members.
Yeah.
Some of them don't have no connection to that community.
That maybe someone who serves on a board may be the brother, sister, cousin, husband of someone who has an interest in a charter school.
It's all chock full of conflict of interest. We're going to take a couple of questions right quickly before we kind of close out, because I want to talk to you about something else. We're going to take Miss Alicia right quick. Good morning, Miss Alicia. I understand you have a question about the ethics issue here.
Yeah, it's a question and a statement.
Sure.
Miss Brown, nice article. I read it and I loved it.
Thank you.
It behooved me, because I couldn't understand all the stuff that was going on up there with the protections for Kyra Orange Jones, but yet the same people that are protecting Kyra are, trying to go after Ira Thomas in his dual role, which one has nothing to do with the other. What he does for Southern University in New Orleans has absolutely nothing to do with him being the president of the New Orleans School Board, Orleans Parish School Board, but yet they're going after him. Is this not the pot calling the kettle black?
It's more than the pot calling the
kettle
black. This is, again, my opinion, but it's a concerted effort to, one, deflect, distract, to get attention off of the real ethical questions and concerns, to take attention off of the failure of the RSD, and try to focus the attention of the public on what is a non-issue.
Right.
That's it's more than the pot calling the kettle black.
And
it is
Yeah, I think, and Alicia, let me just also share with you, you know, that attack on Ira Thomas is just so off base.
It is.
Because across the state of Louisiana, we have a number of state and district employees and university employees that serve in the legislature.
That, absolutely.
You
exactly.
Know, and it just goes on and on. We've had school right. board members before. And one was a dean who was Brechtel's, and this is some years back, Miss Alicia, because I can recite history a little bit. But there was Brechtel's, Jackie Clarkson's brother, served on the school board. He was a dean at the West Bank campus of Delgado. He was not a director. Now this lady is a director. Ira Thomas is an employee.
Right.
And so was John Johnson was an employee right. of Southern University, and so is Wesley Bishop, and
Austin
so Badon. Is
Austin Badon.
You know, so I don't see any difference there. So I think you're on point.
Right. Absolutely, but you know it's just a part of a concerted effort to deflect, and to distract us, and not only that, but to try and malign any individuals
right.
who are not getting on this
not getting on bandwagon.
The bandwagon.
So
yeah, that's what it is.
Alicia, I gotta go. You have any
thank
other comments?
Okay. You.
Thank you. We're gonna take Brother Al right quick. Good morning, Brother Al. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative. Good morning, Brother Al. I might have lost him. I don't know. Al? I think I lost him. Maybe we'll get him back again. You guys, you know, let's move a little bit beyond this ethics thing. I think that, you know, you guys have done a wonderful job in exposing that, you know, some more of this, you know, deflection, so to speak, and this bad agenda. But you guys, over the last 4 or 5 years have taken a very, very strong position, and in my opinion, have written very vigorously against this whole reform movement. How would you, what drove you guys to this whole issue, in really calling out the issues, the problems and the fundamental flaws about the reforms? Some newspapers have not jumped out there, but what drove you guys to that?
Absolutely, just the injustice of it all. And you know, I guess it really comes down to even before... 2005, 2006, before Katrina. And in fact, you know, we looked and watched what happened with Act 193.
Yeah.
Which to us is the beginning, you know, was the beginning of it all. And so when we watched the failure of the individuals that are elected to serve us and to serve our communities, their failure to protect public education, their failure to protect our students, we can't help but speak what we believe is the truth and advocate. And I tell you, you know, we joke about us having an RSD beat, and sometimes we feel like we're the only ones screaming from the rooftops, but, you know, we keep doing it because of the failure of particularly mainstream media to report the truth. I mean, I look at some of the headlines that appear in the once daily newspaper, you know, extolling the virtues of what has happened and talking about the gains and the improvements. And then I go to the Louisiana Department of Education website and look at the data for myself, and I'm like, am I in the twilight zone?
Yeah.
Are we looking at the same information?
Yeah.
So somebody has to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And that's what we do.
Yeah. And, you know, with all respect, that has been the mark of the Tribune from its beginning.
Thank you.
And also the Tribune has a history in this community that dates back more than 100 years of dealing with civil rights kinds of issues too, correct?
Well, the original New Orleans Tribune, yes, has a history that's 100 years old. And the New Orleans Tribune today, which was named in honor of that first New Orleans Tribune, certainly we hope that we are continuing to work, and we believe, and that's why we do it, we believe we're continuing to work in that vein, to advocate and call to action and tell the truth about issues that we believe are important to marginalized people and people within our community, even when and especially when no one else will. That's why we do what we do.
Now, getting back to this undemocratic issue, and you know, early on this morning's program with Tracy and Oliver, Timbaland Sam was on this morning, and she was talking about participatory budgeting process and participatory government, which I think is really, really important, and they're having a meeting. And I think that, and I know Timbaland is on this point, but I think that we also should realize that, you know, as we sit here today and as we have been sitting here for the last 7, going on 8 years now, a great deal of our tax dollars that is paid for public education goes through a process of contracting and budgeting that New Orleans doesn't know anything about because it's done by the Bessie Board.
Mm-hmm.
And about $500 million annually is contracted out that comes out of the coffers of the taxpayers of New Orleans. And those decisions are made in Baton Rouge by this Bessie Board, who right now, you know, out of the 11 members, we only have 2 members that speak up for us.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, you know, neither of those two is Kyra Orange Jones. But this whole issue of it being undemocratic and, you know, the fact that, you know, we pay tax dollars here in New Orleans for public education, yet all the decisions of contracts on who gets hired and all of those things are made outside of New Orleans. That is so undemocratic. You know, we have not chosen a superintendent. We have not participated in the selection of a superintendent since 2005 for most of the schools in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we
right.
just we have not had a participatory process by duly elected officials from New Orleans.
Exactly.
You know, I would like for you to comment on that in closing. You know, just this whole undemocratic process, and I know you guys feel rather strongly about that.
It's taxation without representation at
yeah.
the end of the day is what it is, and that's what makes it problematic, that all of these decisions are being made and money is being spent by individuals who at the end of the day do not have to answer to the people of this city. I have what I think in my mind is a simple plan, and you know, there is an elected body of individuals who in this city that control a small portion of the public schools that are here. And you know, I wish that there was some way, and I've actually said this before in writing, I've said this before on the air here at WBOK when I've come on other shows, you know, if every parent of a public school student in this city withdrew their child from an RSD school and went to the doors of the Orleans Parish School Board, the duly elected body, the only duly elected, and you have to take us.
Yeah, take us, take
yeah,
us.
And I think that, you know, in my mind,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
you know, it could work.
Well, you know, and to be honest with you, you know, hopefully, you know, and I know they got issues on the school board, and there's new board members on there, but you know, we really need to hold them ultimately responsible
yes.
for this, and make them be more aggressive than what they've been, and with Ira, he has talked about that, but there needs to be a concerted effort on this board. Anitra, I want to thank you for coming in and for talking about this. This most important issue, and to bring light this revelation about another conflict of interest.
Yeah,
you know, seems to be par for the course. We want to thank you for coming.
Happy to be here. Okay. Thank you.
We would like to extend our condolences to the Williams family. Dr. Everett Williams, former New Orleans Public School superintendent, passed on yesterday morning. He served as a school superintendent in New Orleans for about 7 years. He was the first African-American superintendent. So we would like to extend our condolences to the family of Everett Williams and also to his church where he served as an ordained deacon for years and years and years. This program will rebroadcast on the New Orleans Imperative.org, the New Orleans Imperative.org. You can also make a donation. Any donation is sorely needed to kind of keep this program on the air. We know a lot of people listen to it, but you can also make a donation at that website on the New Orleans Imperative.org. We would like to thank sponsors who have sponsored us over the years, Metro and Richards Disposal, New Orleans Educational Equity Roundtable, Fallbrook St. Rock Improvement Association, and the Wisdom Reception Center. Please stay tuned for Talk What You Know with Reverend Littleton's and Reverend Jones. Thank you for listening to the New Orleans Imperative, and have a good week.